If you love Star Wars and love the excitement of chasing your favorite Star Wars collectibles, the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting app from Topps is for you. Collect and trade with friends new and old through the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting app from Topps. These are the cards you're looking for.
This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. I regret to report that both our Jedi Order and the Republic have fallen. Our future is uncertain. But in time, a new hope will emerge.
Coffee with Kenobi presents Rebels Reactions with Dan Z and Corey Club.
All troopers, focus your fire on... on the Jedi.
Come with us. Learn what it truly means to be a Jedi.
I'm in space. And I'm about to die.
You need an opening.
Found one.
What did he say?
He said hello, hyperspace.
Oh, and guess what? This is the podcast you're looking for.
Welcome back to Rebels Reactions. This is your host, Aaron Harris, and man, what a discussion we're going to have on this episode. Trials of the Darksaber recently aired. We have a phenomenal episode to discuss. So much about Sabine, so much about Mandalore, so much about the Darksaber to discuss. Man, it's going to be a great night. And you know what? We have an all-star cast joining us for this discussion. It doesn't get much better than this. Of course, joining us in her reactions debut is Lillian Sky. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me tonight.
Well, awesome. I'm glad you were able to join us. It's always great to talk to new people and get them involved in the show. And definitely, we got a great discussion here.
And yeah, great episode.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And making his Rebels Reactions return, the man who started it all, one of the men who started it all, at least, Mr. Dan Z. Dan, how are you doing?
I am doing fantastic. Again, every time I come, I'm just so impressed with what you've done with the place. Looks good.
Well, you know, I try. I had a good foundation to build off of, so.
Well, you were very kind. And Lillian, I didn't realize this was your first Rebels Reactions. That's pretty cool.
It is. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, it's going to be a lot of fun, a lot of excitement, a lot to discuss, and we're not going to hesitate jumping into it as we start discussing Trials of the Darksaber. Basically, this episode, a lot of interesting going on as Sabine starts training with the Darksaber after being convinced by Finn Rao and Kanan, Ezra, and Hera, and the rest of the crew that she needs to pick up the saber, which we get some good history on in this episode, and take the steps that she needs to try to reunite the clans of Mandalore and get them on the rebellion side. And we see her struggle with her inner demons as she's dealing with the has to actually face her families and why she doesn't want to do that, and a whole myriad of emotions, and a cameo by Bindu. So definitely a lot of fun things to discuss. Lillian, it's your reaction debut. Let's start with you. What was your overall first impression of this episode when you first saw it?
I loved it. I think this is one of the first episodes this season that I really connected with, because I just really loved seeing the emotion from everyone. Like, because you really got to see how desperate some of the characters got, kind of pleading with Sabine to kind of start training with the Darksaber. And then you got to really see a different side of Sabine too. I think she's really been really strong this whole season, and even the whole past three seasons we've had. And then this, you really got to see some of her inner struggle. So I think that's something I'm excited to talk about tonight.
Perfect. Yeah, there's a lot of Sabine in this, which is definitely always a great topic to hit on. Dan, I know you were excited to talk about this episode. What were your first impressions when you sat down and watched Trials of the Darksaber?
Yeah, I had a heads up that this was one that we were going to want to watch, and I knew that Dave Filoni had written it, which always makes it more personal, which seems perfect, because one of the best things about Star Wars for me is the characters and the character arcs and their journeys. And this episode personifies why Star Wars at its core is about family, it's about character, it's about relationships, both inner conflict and within the universe that they inhabit. And I tell you what, there's a reason. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love to be on every single episode of Rebels Reactions. I get that itch, you know. But after I saw this, I texted you right away and I said, if you have room in your studio, I would love to be a part, because this is a fantastic episode.
It truly is. And as I've told you before, you are always welcome. Anytime you want to join in, you never always ready to crash the party and have you on with us. Definitely.
I like the idea of the, like, windows crashing, like playing Stone Cold Steve Austin music when I come in. That's kind of fun.
You know what? I can edit that in. I just might have to do that. But yeah, this was just a mind-blowing episode. When I first sat down and watched this, it really, really just was wow. I was speechless after the first time I watched it for a while as I gathered my thoughts, because there's just so much happening in such a short amount of time. And we get so much detail that we did not have before on a couple of different things, on the Darksaber, on Sabine, and just her entire backstory begins to open up as we begin to see her growth in the story. Let's of course start off talking about the Darksaber, because it's what's getting the ball rolling in this story, is that Darksaber. Of course, we know the Darksaber from the Clone Wars, wielded by Pre Vizsla, taken by Darth Maul, used to kill Satine, and just a whole story with that saber from the Clone Wars, which if you haven't seen, go back and watch. You'll love it. But definitely, this saber was quite historic, and we get a lot of information on that history. When they first started opening up and talking about the history of the saber, what did that do to you, Dan?
This is when I saw this, the little tease that they send out, that Lucasfilm publicity sends out the week of the episode, and I saw the 2D animation and the art of that. It reminded me sort of like the beginning of Lord of the Rings or some sort of mythological thing. I knew we're going to see the mythology enhanced and brightened in a new way, which is interesting to say brightened when it's a Darksaber. But I thought it was so moving and so beautiful, and you could just feel the pathos in the room, because Dave Filoni loves Star Wars. And to me, this is like his graduation from Lucasfilm, because we know he's studied with George Lucas for years and years making Star Wars stories, already proven himself time and time again. But this seemed to me like, George, thank you. I'm going to run with your lessons and your mythology, and I'm going to make it my own in your honor. And I thought it was wonderful. Just the mythology of this and the ties to King Arthur, I just thought it was gorgeous.
Oh, definitely. It really was. And the whole idea around the Darksaber, with the story behind it being originated by the first Mandalorian to be inducted in the Jedi Order, Tar Vizsla. Very powerful story there, because once he passes, the Jedi keep the saber, and the Mandalorians, the Clan Vizsla, comes and takes it back from him, the story goes. Then they use it as a symbol of their power to reunite the Mandalorians. Of course, definitely, it was quite a detailed story with the animation they did. What were your thoughts on the history, if I could speak tonight, the history of the saber, Lillian?
I loved it. I love the tale that Fenn told, and like Dan mentioned, the animation. And to me, if you know the Clone Wars and you know kind of Dave Filoni and his style, if you went into this not knowing it was written by Dave Filoni, you came out of it, especially after this short little tale, knowing that Dave Filoni, he put his own twist on it and his touch, because it is just exactly his style, and the way he tells Star Wars is just so beautiful. And I'm a big fan of Dave Filoni, and just learning more about the saber was really great. And then also just seeing this different style was something that I think was perfect backstory and enough going into it where it didn't really take away, but it also leaves you wanting more, because I really want to know more about Tar Vizsla and kind of how he created the Darksaber, and I really want to know more about that.
You're not alone in that either. I mean, I've gotten several messages through since the episode aired, wondering if we would ever get to see some of that backstory. Do you think we'll get that in some form, Dan?
Oh yes. I mean, I think that the history of Mandalore has pretty much been at the root of one of the things that Dave Filoni's wanted to explore in the Star Wars universe, and I think this is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, we've already seen the clip for the one that's coming out in a few weeks, and I think there's much more to do. I've always wanted to see more of Sabine, and I felt like she was, I mean, a wonderfully exciting character, but they didn't give her much to do. And once I feel like they've established Ezra and Kanan, I think now the focus turns to Sabine, and I think that's exciting.
It really is, because they've really almost kind of held her back to this point to almost build that Ezra Kanan story. And now that that's where they want it to be at this moment, they're able to build up Sabine and give us the story that everybody's been clamoring for, because people have wanted her backstory since season one when she was first introduced. I know I did, and I'm sure y'all did too. So definitely it's fun to see where they're building with her and with the Mandalorians. Now, of course, Sabine is having through this episode, we see her a lot more standoffish than we've ever seen her before. A lot of it has to do with the fact that, you know, she doesn't want to deal with the saber. Even Kanan says when he's talking to Finn Rao at the beginning, she hasn't even mentioned it since she gave it to him after they left Dathomir. And of course, as the story goes on, we find out it's mainly because the responsibility that comes with that. And even Finn Rao called it out. She doesn't want that responsibility. And of course, we find out why. And of course, later on, toward the end of the episode, we find out about her backstory and why she doesn't want that responsibility with her family issues that she has at home. Seeing her growth through this episode, what jumped out at you the most as being the biggest part of her growth in this episode, Lillian?
I think just the fact that you mentioned she really has been held back, not just as a character, but I think personally she's been holding back. Like every episode we've seen her in, she's been very strong. She's been the first one to step up and really, she's always been really sure of herself. But I think now we see that while she's been sure of herself and confident, she's also holding so much of herself back. Like she is really worried about her family and what her family thinks of her. And I know we're probably not going to touch on it till later in the episode, but when she is sparring with Kanan, we really see a lot of that come out, where she just really becomes more vulnerable and she reveals more of herself to everyone. And I think that just really spoke to me with how vulnerable she actually is as a character when she comes across as very strong.
She does come across very strong eventually in this episode. And it's hard to believe, knowing how the episode ends, how strong she's actually been and been through all these episodes, and we haven't even truly realized it, because we see a lot of strength in her character that she's had to deal with, and she's overly confident in her ability.
She is, and you really see that in her banter with Ezra in every episode, especially in this episode.
Oh, her overconfidence truly comes out, and almost to an arrogant level in this episode, and which is more than we've seen from her before. You know, we've seen her confident, we've seen her in her know what she's doing, and she's dealing with the, you know, stormtroopers and so on. But there's always been that level. It's a different kind of confidence than what we have in this, which is quite interesting. And you're right, we're going to get into that spar with Kanan, because there's a lot we want to hit on in that, but we're going to do that a little later, because a lot of what comes out in that sparring match with Kanan is built through the episode, because we see Kanan take her, and Ezra, of course, take Sabine out middle of the desert, middle of the planet, to out in the wild, to train her, to get her comfortable using the saber, so because they know if she does try to unite the clans, people are going to find out she has the saber. She's going to have to defend herself. and we see Kanan take almost a completely opposite approach to her training than Ezra's training, and it's very interesting. Dan, what did you think of Kanan's approach with Sabine?
I think the juxtaposition here of, first of all, just any time a Jedi trains an apprentice or a Padawan, even though Sabine is not technically a Jedi. Well, she's not a Jedi at all. There's no technical about it. But he needs to prepare, because you very much see Kanan is interesting, because sometimes he's a father figure, sometimes he's a big brother, sometimes he's a taskmaster, and I think he's sort of all of the above for her. The love they have for each other, you know, a very familial love, it comes through, and it's also very authentic, because there's a lot of tension and there's a lot of pride. And Sabine, I think, as you both mentioned very, very eloquently, she's the biggest conflict she has is her family, but it really focuses in on herself. And it's hard to look at the picture when you're inside the frame, right? So she can't really focus on what she needs to. And as a result, she holds back. And Kanan holds back. And I love, and we'll get to this later, I'm sure, I love Hera's role in this episode to motivate him, because I feel like it was pretty cool. I mean, maybe there are parts of him that sees how powerful Ezra has become, and he looks back on the mistakes that he thinks that he made, and this is where he's trying to kind of start over in a way.
Exactly. And there's and you're right, Hera plays a unique part in the training environment that she's in, because we see her interject her thoughts with Kanan as it's going on, because she can tell things are going differently. Because, you know, with Ezra, when we first started training, seeing Ezra train, it was strictly with the lightsaber. We didn't see these training sabers, these pieces of wood that Sabine is being forced to start with, which, you know, obviously,
I think they're symbolic too, by the way.
Okay, go ahead.
I think this whole thing is about about a personal resurrection. It's Sabine's resurrection. So she has to start out on the wooden cross, but it's not a cross. It's a wooden sword. And when she finally releases that and lets go of that part that's tied into Earth, you know, and then she's able to rise again and start anew. It might be a stretch, but I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah, I like that. No, yeah. I like that.
Yeah, that's really good. I like
I have that. My moments, I guess. What were you going to say, Lillian?
Yeah, what were you going to say?
Oh, just I really like that, how she, she started out. And then when she has the sword, they do talk about how she connects with it, mm-hmm. and how she feels like it's a burden at first. But then, you know, she really takes that burden, or she accepts it. And so that is symbolic, too, where she, even going back to the episode where she finds the Darksaber, she doesn't want the responsibility, but she knows what it is, and she takes it with her anyway. So I feel like all along, although she's reluctant to accept it and accept the training, and I feel like she all along knew she was going to, because she could have left the lightsaber, or the Darksaber, excuse me, on Dathomir, but she brought it with her knowing what it was, and knowing just kind of how important the Darksaber is and what she would have to do.
The energy aspect that you just brought up, I think, is so key. And I'm sure we'll bring that up later as well, but there's so much metaphor in their training. It's just wonderful.
Oh, the training is phenomenal. I mean, as we see it going on, we see Kanan, of course, initially starts and then turns her over to Ezra. And of course, Ezra is not even sure she's going to be capable enough to function. Because even Ezra, when he was first questioning it, he's like, you know, I had the Force to help me. And of course, that just angered Sabine. And she's like, give me that saber. I'll mm-hmm. show you what I can. And they had to stop her at that point, because, mm-hmm. you know, who knows what she would have done to Ezra, really. Definitely, it's a unique perspective that we see coming into this, because you could see her frustration with almost, she feels like, not only is she being forced into this position because everybody's wanting her to do it, but she's almost, they're teaching, almost, she almost, they almost feel that she, well, let's start that over again, because I'm getting tongue-tied. Sabine almost has the expressions and emotion that not only are they forcing her to do this, but that they are also not confident in her abilities to pull it off. Do you think Kanan and the others really think she can pull this particular mission off, knowing that she's not 100% sold into doing it? Lillian?
I think that's why we initially see Kanan telling, I think that's why we initially see Kanan asking her if she really wants to do it. Like, you see everyone pushing her to do it. Fenn, and then Hera is saying that we really need her to do it to rally the Mandalorians to the rebel cause. And then Kanan is asking her, well, what do you want to do? And I think he knows she can do it. I just think he's, like Dan mentioned, he's like a father figure, a brother. He really cares about her. So I don't think he wants to see her fail. But I think he also knows that she can do it. It's just if she's willing to really push herself.
I mean, definitely there's got to be a confidence level there, too, that she has to have to make it work. I mean, you can go in with the best intentions. You don't have the confidence in what you're doing. It's going to make it more difficult to succeed. Dan, do you think his approach in training her reflected his confidence in her and her ability to get the job done?
I do, because the classic example again is, of course, the training sabers, which all three of us have been consuming Star Wars for a long time, and I don't really remember that being a prevalent aspect of the Jedi mythology. And you get the sense that, first of all, he has Ezra do it for a long time, which I found interesting there, the way they developed their relationship again. But he almost takes a step back. And as an educator, I know what that signifies, and as do both of you. You're both astute, as is our Coffee with Kenobi family that's listening. He wants to take a step back. There's a part of him that doesn't want to be responsible for it, and that's, I think, why he doesn't let her use the Darksaber. And then finally, once he, basically gets told by Herod, listen, you've got to focus. You've got to quit making this about you. It's not about you. You're worried about her. You care about her. But you're not doing her any favors. It's the parent thing. You want to protect your children. You don't want them to get hurt, but you also have to let them fail, because they have to learn how to pick themselves back up. And once he realizes that, boy, does he ever. And, the end duel is just, I know we'll get to that. I keep saying that. I'm a broken record. It just completely shows everybody's on board. Everybody's decided this is what we're going to do. And basically, are you going to be a human being, or are you going to be a human doing? And they're doing, and they're doing. And finally, once they realize this is who we are, this is what we're supposed to do, when they start to be, then I think the Force works through all of them.
And this is why I like having you on the show, Dan. Very, very nice. Very well said. Very well said.
Thank you.
Because it's definitely a very interesting aspect there, because we even see Finn Rao even wants to step up and help her out in this situation, in her training, because he knows she's obviously struggling. He shows up to bring supplies and brings her a gift, which is a set of arm cuffs that most Mandalorian warriors would have. I mean, of course, they could flat out say these were strictly taken, developed for the Mandalorians to combat the Jedi. And we see her put those to use as, to quote Finn Rao, as she tries to knock Bridger down a notch, which she successfully does, using these weapons that were developed. And you see Kanan does not take a fond look to these weapons.
Very dismissive, isn't
he? Very dismissive of these weapons. He even calls her out saying that, remember, the Jedi won the war with Mandalore, so these may help you out every once in a while, but they will not save you.
Yeah, he really believed that those would hinder her in a fight.
Exactly. And we even see her prove to some of their struggle is trying to use those weapons, and Kanan exploits it and takes advantage of it. But then we also see her use it correctly as the saber gets knocked out of her hands, and she uses the I guess vibro whip or whatever they call it to grab it and yank it back to her hands. Very almost very force-like in nature. So we see when she gets those, her confidence level jumps too, for a few moments.
Yeah, and I think it's because it's a weapon she's used to, or it's something that she knows that she could use, whereas this Darksaber is so new and it's not really familiar. And then this is also a Mandalorian weapon that, you know, probably she grew up using, whereas the Darksaber she's never touched before in her life.
Right. And it's also, I think, her struggles. And what Kanan is so worried about is the specter of Maul is present. And he's the one who was responsible for passing the baton inadvertently, the Darksaber to Sabine. So undeniably, what Kanan is worried about, whether he's not saying it outright, is if you do this against Maul, you're done. These tricks are not going to work. They're going to work maybe against other Mandos. They're going to work against stormtroopers, certainly. But against someone who knows how to use a lightsaber, you're not going to have a chance. This is not a kid's game. If you're going to do this, I'm going to treat you like an adult. And boy, does he ever. I mean, the fact that he doesn't even use his lightsaber for 90% of the end duel is very telling.
Oh, yeah. And he definitely just steps back and lets her fly in that end duel. Which definitely, there's a lot to cover in that end duel, so I'm trying to push that off for a little longer before we get into that, because there's just so much in there that we need to consume.
I do have the list of the weapons. I don't know if you looked on StarWars.com, but we've got the Mandalorian Vambrace, it's called. She's got blaster barrels that fire the yellow lasers, the repulsor, and then she's got the energized rope.
Energized rope, that's it.
Yeah. I wouldn't have known if I didn't look on StarWars.com.
Yeah, I got it pulled up here. I just was trying to find exactly where I had it, where it said. There it is, as I find it after the fact. There we go. But, phenomenal pieces of technology that Fenral gave her that she was very happy to get. And it definitely made a difference for her because, as y'all said, she's very comfortable with it. Let's talk for a second about Bendu, because he shows up for just a few seconds, doesn't say anything. Obviously, he's aware of what's going on around him. But during after Sabine storms off, after her explosive confrontation with Kanan, Ezra comes to talk to her, and that conversation doesn't go well either. And Ezra leaves her alone, and she gets up and walks off in the opposite direction. We see Bendu just kind of lift his head up and look around at that point. Why do you think Bendu we know Bendu's there. We know that area of the planet where they are because we recognize the cave and the little crater type area they're in as being where Bendu lives and where they've met with him before. But why do you think he... knowing what was going on, why do you think he kind of held off his presence and just, and why even bring him up at this point at all in this? What do you think that is meaning, or why do you think he's there, Dan?
I think he's just representative of the Force. He's more powerful in the Force than Yoda, according to Freddie Prinze Jr. And he's just there sort of observing, and in the way that he is positioned and the way he turns, it's like he's aware, but he's looking out of the corner of his eye, so to speak, because he's not going to get involved. This isn't his fight. He's not good. He's not bad. He just is. So he's letting these other characters who are conduits for the Force, letting them exercise the potential that the Force sees in them. And I think it's pretty cool. It's very much like he's like a god, so to speak, and he's just observing people's growth.
Do you think he spoke with her at all?
I don't because she seems so, and even if he did, Lillian, I don't think that she would hear it because I think she's so focused on her doubts that she's not open to listening. And it is until the end, of course, that she does. Mm-hmm. Do you think that?
I don't know. The first time I watched it, I thought maybe that was one of the reasons she went back. That, I don't know, either she sensed his presence because I feel like...
I see what you're saying.
You know, I feel like so many different characters in Star Wars have the Force, or they're Force sensitive. They're just not as in tune to it as the Jedi are. So I wondered if maybe he kind of reassured her in a way through the Force, or she sensed his presence and that's what compelled her to go back and apologize to Kanan. I don't know.
Well, there may be a story in the fact that when she leaves and comes back at nighttime, I mean, there could be something to that. And you are right on. Pablo had said that, you know, everyone has the Force. Han Solo has the Force. They just have different levels of it in the way that it's channeled. Not, I mean, hardly anyone is a Jedi, but the Force is just, it's just part of an energy field that surrounds us and penetrates us. You know, we know the line binds the galaxy together. So it'd be interesting to see if the Force is in fact guiding her, but I would be shocked if the Bendu outright is, because I don't know what it would be in it for him.
That's true.
Very good. See, we have great discussions on Rebels Reactions, and I love every minute of it.
I love hearing how you two are bringing this in, because it makes me think about, like, when Lillian just said that, I thought, wow, maybe there is something to that journey. Maybe there'll be a book or something later where we see what happened when she was out in her desert. If you want to take the Christ metaphor even further, she's out in the desert and comes back.
Yeah, because
she left feeling one way and came back more ready to accept kind of her fate, if you will, with the Dark Saber.
She definitely went on a journey out there, and it's definitely a story I'd like to hear one day. What happened to Sabine in the desert? that journey. Because definitely it was, because even Ezra and Fenrir are talking about how long she's been gone. So definitely it's something happened to her out there, and she came to a realization. How, definitely we don't know right now. We may not find out in a while. If ever, but definitely it's something to just know. Something in her changed when she came back. And definitely we want to go through this fight coming up. But before we get into this fantastic duel and the opening up of Sabine's character, we're going to let Dan bring in Corey and tell us about the Tops Trading app. You ready for that, Dan?
I think I am. This is going to be very meta, isn't it?
Very, very. So here we go. Dan, Corey, it's up to you.
If you are a huge Star Wars fan, and let's face it, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably are. And if you love collecting Star Wars, the Star Wars Card Trader app from Topps is for you.
The best part, the Star Wars Card Trader app features incredible images from the original trilogy, the prequels, the Clone Wars, Rebels, and The Force Awakens. Every era you love is included on the app.
It's easy and a lot of fun too. Beloved characters, key scenes, and unforgettable moments are in every pack. Open the app every day and get free credits to spend on card packs from the cantina, trade with your friends, and make new ones along the way as you continue to add to your Star Wars collection. And it's all free.
The variety makes it fun too. So chase what you love. Some of the latest packs include poster series, classic comic book series, helmet variety packs, and so much more. There are even exclusive cards you can get by completing sets, as well as special inserts and even autograph opportunities. Don't worry about missing the cards you love either, as you sign up for notifications right on the app.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting app from Topps can be downloaded for free from iTunes or Google Play. Be sure to download the app and start your collection today.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader app from Topps is available now. And remember, these are the cards you're looking for.
Well, thank you so much, Dan and Corey, for telling us about the Topps Star Wars Trading Card app. If you haven't downloaded it, download it now. It's a lot of fun, a lot of great artwork, a lot of great pictures from all lines of Star Wars, the movies, the TV shows. Check it out. Enjoy it. So, back to Trials of the Darksaber. A few more things we definitely want to hit on to wrap up this discussion of a truly tremendous and truly deep episode. And we're about to get into some of the deepest parts of the episode. One person that we need to hit on real quick, because he had played a pretty pivotal role in this episode, had some very pivotal moments, is Fen'Rell. Of course, we remember Fen'Rell as he was introduced as the protector of Concord Dawn, taken into quote-unquote custody as the rebels gained passage through there for safe travel, and definitely have wound up through other episodes joining the rebellion at this point, because obviously realizing that there's nothing for him left with the Empire anymore. So very interesting man, person. Finn Rao definitely loved his armor. He's got a new set of armor in this as well, as part of the whole Mandalorian character that he has with his everything. Dan, Finn Rao, what were your opinions of him in this episode?
I thought this was the first time that we've seen him sort of who he is, you know, at the dinner table with his family, so to speak, because whenever we've seen him before, he was, you know, when we first met him, he was very aggressive and had quite a chip on his shoulder. He did not want to help the rebellion. He did not want to let them go through, take safe passage through around the planet of Mandalore. And he was nasty. And now a lot has happened. And so he's the one who, I think it's neat. You can tell he's changed because when Kanan brings out the Darksaber, he seems happy and they talk about it like old friends at a campground or something. And he doesn't seem threatened or possessive. He's overjoyed to share his culture. And I think something that shows that is the fact that he never once in the entire episode puts on the helmet, never puts on the bucket. He's always, it's personal for him in the best way possible. So the fact that he has hardly any armor on at all and no helmet shows that he is open. He is open to Sabine. He wants to help her. He wants to guide her. And the fact that he typifies Mandalore and Kanan typifies the Jedi, both parts are parts of her because they both represent her families. So he's just quite a lovely figurehead in this episode.
Exactly. And he represents something that she's always loved, but has always kept that at arm's length too. She's kept her Mandalore. She embraces right. her Mandalorian heritage, but she keeps Mandalore at bay. Cause she has that history there. So I think there for the longest time, he was possibly a reminder of what she was missing. And definitely seeing him step up and take that role to assist her brings him in a new light. He's the one that brings her the Mandalorian vambraces and those weapons, and then plays a pivotal role at the end of the episode when this fantastic duel is over. So definitely he's got a lot of he's grown a lot since we've seen him last, obviously, when he decided to join the rebellion at the end of Super Commandos, Imperial Super Commando episode earlier this season. But let's go ahead and start the discussion that everybody's talked about with this episode. This ultimate fight, this ultimate lightsaber battle between Sabine and Kanan at this point. Giving in to Hera's recommendations, Kanan gives her the Darksaber to train with. And it's Kanan and Sabine one-on-one, lightsaber to lightsaber. And he basically his goal is not just to train her, but to get her, obviously to get her to face the facts of the situation and face her demons at this point. And this whole scene, start to finish, by the end of it, left me with chills by the time it was said and done. Because we see her come out of her shell completely, in very, very angry, very emotional. A lot of pent up anger comes out in this fight for her. Lillian, what did you think of the Sabine we saw in this fight? Because it's not one we've seen in previous episodes or previous seasons even.
Yeah, I thought this was just like raw, pure emotion that she was representing here. She was telling them her whole story and just basically her whole struggle and how she was dealing with her family and her family kind of leaving her. And I still can't believe everything that she told Kanan and how Kanan got it out of her. And I thought it was interesting how Kanan was taunting her in a way, and it was almost like he was trying to make her angry to bring out this passion in her and get her to admit why she needs to accept this leadership role. And I thought that was very interesting, and a new perspective on, gave me a new perspective kind of on Kanan and his abilities as well.
It truly does, because he held nothing back. He kept calling her out time and time again. Why are you doing this? You know, they think you're a failure. Why? And he just kept taunting her and pushing button after button after button till she finally snapped. And honestly, this whole scene and reminded me of that last battle between Vader and Luke on the Death Star, as Luke is hiding there trembling because he doesn't want to fight Vader, and Vader's just calling, is just constantly agitating Luke, and eventually calls him out, saying, if you're not going to turn, maybe your sister will. And Luke snaps and comes out, and you see that just raw emotion come out of Luke as he just battles Vader at that point. That's what I saw in this fight. Dan, what did you think? Did you see a connection like that?
I'm glad that you brought that up, because one of the things I noticed when I watched this was Kanan is trying to bait Sabine to be angry, which you would never do if you were a Jedi, because anger is the way to the dark side.
Exactly.
But she's not a Force wielder. For her, the anger that he wants her to tap into isn't really anger so much as emotion. She's basically thawing out. In essence, she's not cold to the notion of, you know, basically it's guilt. I mean, she has a very major confession that she talks about that is stunning. And I think Kanan didn't know what it was, but he knew there was something, that there was a cross that she was bearing, and she had to let it go. And I also think it's interesting. There's a lot that's interesting about this, a lot. But how about the fact that at first the Darksaber for Sabine is heavy, and then as she becomes more proficient and becomes more comfortable in her own skin, because this is really what it's about. It's not really about the Darksaber. It's more about her being comfortable with who she is and what she thinks has happened. And once she accepts that, then the burden, so to speak, becomes lighter, and she's able to come to grips with what's going on. And then she's able to really come at Kanan. I just love the scene where they're doing the forms and suddenly becomes more than that. And while there's intense anger, I never feel like they're mad at each other. I feel like Kanan's a little bit mad at himself for holding back, for being afraid, because he knows that's not the Jedi way. And then when he lets go, it's almost like, all right, I'm going to make up for lost time. This is what you wanted. Here it comes. And she, conversely, is more like, she's not fighting Kanan. She's fighting the demons within herself, and hence the dark saber.
And I think that's why Kanan said that she's someone who's so expressive yet so tightly wound.
Yes.
Because she expresses herself through her art, but she doesn't express herself with words and how she's feeling. And so Kanan really brought that out of her.
And not to mention the fact that in that scene, Kanan also takes off his mask. Mostly ever since he's been blinded by Maul, he keeps that visor over him, except for certain personal moments, and doesn't get more personal than this as the last scene hits in. But the mask is off, so he's not holding back. It's personal for him too.
Exactly, and I'm glad you brought that up, because that was one thing I had noted down, is his mask is gone. He had taken that off, and he's letting her see straight into it. I mean, it's all, you know, the eyes are the window to the soul.
That's right.
And granted, he's blind now, but he's taken that mask off, which I had a feeling she decorated for him, but she took that mask off and is letting her see, this is personal. This is what we need to do. This is how we're going to not only get you comfortable, this is how we're going to fix things, essentially. We're going to get you to break out of that shell. And she does. And she, when she finally snaps and she starts going off on Kanan, it is just incredible, because Kanan immediately goes on the defensive. He goes from having one hand on his saber with one hand behind his back, just dodging every swing of the Darksaber, to both hands on his saber, fighting, almost fighting for his life at that point, because she is coming at him with literally everything she has. Mm-hmm. And out of just literally pure raw emotion, as she is just telling him, t- throughout the whole thing, I did this for my family. I don't quit. I'm not a quitter. I did this for my mom. I did this for my dad. I did this for my brother. I did this for Mandalore. And this is where she starts opening up. She starts talking about what actually happened to her. She was building weapons for the Empire, weapons that created fear, weapons that were turned on Mandalore, weapons that were used against her family, used against her friends, used against people she knows. So she's been carrying that guilt of what she had done for years since she had left the Academy. And that's why she left and ran away from the Imperial Academy. It's because of what they had her doing. And because of that, her parents labeled her as a traitor, as a quitter. And that's not who she is, because they could not understand that's she was everything she did, she was doing for them, which is just a true. I mean, you can't get much more of Mandalorian loyalty than that. As Finn Rao even says it, the Wrens value family above all else. It's a Mandalorian tradition, essentially. So we see her snap as she talks about that, how she did everything all for Mandalore. And at that point, we see her actually begin to come to terms with who she is at this point. And it's a completely different Sabine we get after this fight. I mean, we see her she's standing there over Kanan as he's on the ground, unarmed, darksaber over her head, ready to strike. And we see her just, that breaking point finally hit. They chose the Empire over me. They chose the Empire over me, their own flesh and blood. And it doesn't get more real than that. In this moment, and we see her break down and cry. I don't think I'd ever thought I would ever see Sabine cry in Rebels. I don't know about y'all. This was a breaking moment for Sabine, and was beyond. Tia Sakaar did phenomenal. I don't.
Mm-hmm.
It was the perfect. And I tweeted. Steve Bloom tweeted something out about it, and I responded. I mean, it was the perfect performance by everybody involved. You could not have gotten a better performance out of any of these voice actors, Tia and Kanan, or Freddie Prinze. They both did phenomenal in this scene, in their interactions, to just build that story and build the depth. This was mind-boggling how it happened. Lillian, Sabine at this moment is she's at her lowest of lows. What did you think when you saw her break like that?
I just can't even imagine what Sabine has been through. You know, she's talking about how her whole family turned against her, and she, right before she breaks down, she says the Empire wants to destroy worlds where they destroyed mine. Like, her entire world changed when her family left her, because Mandalorian, they're all about that unit and their culture. And, you know, then she's on her own. And I just can't imagine what she was going through and how hard this must be for her to realize that, you know, she has to go back there and she has to face them when they all think she's a traitor.
Exactly. It's a very emotional moment for Sabine. I mean, I can't imagine having to face somebody when you think all they thought of you over these years is that you're a traitor. Definitely it shows a lot of backbone. Even Kanan says it. You're going, what you've gone through is you're stronger than you think. Essentially, definitely it's an emotional moment. Dan, Sabine, breaking, crying, just a wreck at this point. Thoughts?
Well, it happened the way that it happened. It was almost like you said, we hadn't seen that from her, nor had a reason to even think it was going to happen. And it sort of reminds me of how I feel about Rogue One, because things happened that I didn't know I wanted, and now that I have them, I'm like, yes, of course that's how it has to be. And I think that just added to it. So there's her tears. There's the water, right? Let's finish the Christian metaphor, if we will. There's her baptism. She's done, and now she is stronger, as we said. And I don't think there's, there's trepidation. Of course, she's scared. She's not afraid. I don't think she's afraid anymore. Her biggest obstacle was herself. And she is very concerned about what her family is going to think. And, you know, we know we're all human beings. We walk the walk every day. Just because you have a major breakthrough doesn't mean your troubles are over. In many ways, they've just begun. Because this isn't the end of the race. This is the marathon. This is the start of another journey for her. She had to get through where she was. And when everyone bows to her and talks about family, that shows me that whatever comes her way, she has her family already. This is just something to add to and sort of right some wrongs and to heal. I mean, ultimately, her role is going to be as a healer. She helps unite the Jedi and the Mandalorians with Kanan. And now we are here, too, with Fenn Rao, too. So now we are here for her to continue that healing path.
Exactly. And again, we bring, as we mentioned earlier, Fenn Rao has just a few pivotal moments in this episode. And we see that come, the final pivotal moment come right at the end when she's broken and she's bawling. And Kanan's telling her that, you know, her family is basically in a prison of their own making. And it's up to her to help them out of it. And Sabine is like, you know, I just don't know what to do, but how am I going to do this? Why would they follow me? Why would they believe me? And Fenn Rao steps up at that point in the most, what would turn out to be his most pivotal moment of this episode, and says, for what it's worth, I would follow you. And then he takes that knee and bows before her out of respect. And then Ezra follows. Then Kanan, of course, who's already on his knee from when she was on the ground crying, says, you know, no matter what, this family is behind you. And of course, that's where the episode ends. And it was such a moving and emotional moment in this scene that it honestly, I don't think we've had, going back, and we've had a lot of emotional moments in Rebels. From the fight with Ahsoka and Vader, that moment when that mask comes off and you see Anakin, and you hear Matt Lanter's voice doing it again, that moment, very emotional. But I don't think we've had an emotional moment in Rebels that is to the extent that we've had in this episode. This has probably been the most emotional piece we've ever seen in Rebels, and they did it perfectly. And it just does not get, the storytelling doesn't get much better than this, guys. I don't care what you're fans of, what you do, what you watch outside of Rebels, it does, the storytelling you get is not going to be any better than what you're getting in these episodes right now, because their A game is come and it is not going away. Phenomenal work. And with that, we wrap up Trials of the Darksaber, guys. Let's go into final thoughts, because definitely this definitely left everybody with a lot on their mind. Dan, let's start with you. Final thoughts on Trials of the Darksaber.
This was the one that I've been waiting for. I've enjoyed season 3 quite a bit. But for me, as I said at the top of the show, whenever Star Wars is character-driven and personal, I love the battles. I love, you know, the thrilling adventures in space. I love the new creatures and the sound and everything that encapsulates what Star Wars is this cacophony of wonderful. But the personal things, the fact that finally we get to see more of Sabine, and it's through Kanan, because Kanan's been a little bit quiet in this season as well. So to see these two come together, and we'd had hints for a while that he was going to work with Sabine, and it was much more satisfying and much more wonderful than I expected. And what happened when I watched it, the ending scene with them, and how he says, you know, you've got your family here, and they all bow in front of her and say they will follow her. I actually got tears in my eyes, and I don't, that doesn't happen to me. I mean, it does with my family, but when I watch some of these things, it doesn't usually hit me that way, but it did here, because it felt personal. And, you know, when you see that Dave Filoni wrote it, you're again reminded that storytelling at the hands of Dave Filoni and anyone who does Rebels, but especially him, it just means so much more. And because you know it means so much to him, I think that resonates with us as fans.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Well said. Well said. Lillian, final thoughts on Trials of the Darksaber?
I think there was so much character growth here that I'm just going to have to really internalize it all and really think about it more before we kind of see the next episode, because I feel like we've watched all our characters come such a far long way in this episode, you know, for Kanan, for Sabine, and then for Ezra to witness all of this. He really saw this respect for his friend, and he saw her change, and he saw her pure emotions. And, you know, I really can't wait to see what's next.
No, neither can I. And definitely we're going to get that time to wait as they go on a hiatus to into February there. But this was just such a tremendous episode. Trials of the Darksaber lived up to everything I was hoping it would be with this training episode. And we see so much growth from Sabine, and we get so much of her backstory. And we're going to get to see that expounded as after when they come back from hiatus with the next episode, Legacy of Mandalore. It's going to be a continuation of the story of the Darksaber and Sabine at this point. And we're just got so much to look forward to. And this episode hit targets so well. The voice performance was phenomenal. Kevin Kiner nailed it again. The guy nails it week in and week out, but this, honestly, I feel this was some of his finest. The medley there at the end when that battle between Sabine and Kanan was going on was perfect. And the soft touch there at the end just made everything perfect. Not enough Chopper for my taste, but Wooden Chopper was in there. When he was in there, you know, it was just enough and it was perfect. And right there when he goes and gets her to bring her into the meeting, and she walks by and just kind of brushes the top of his head, essentially. Did you hear him let out that little purr?
It was so cute.
Oh my gosh. I laughed so hard. I had to rewind it just to catch what I missed. But I
wanted to see Chopper wield the Darksaber. They could have trained.
Don't give Chopper him any ideas.
Oh, I tell you. You know,
Chopper would do it too. Chopper would be the new Mandalore.
Exactly.
Chopper would take everybody down. That's, you know, they were worried about Sabine hurting somebody. I mean, we were worried about Chopper hurting somebody with that. He would, the first person he'd probably find is R2.
No, not R2.
You'd be the first person he'd find too.
You're saying that because of a Rebels recon, aren't you?
Well, that plus the fact that even in Droids in Distress during the first season, he was not fond of R2. They got into their little chest bump matches in that episode. Then every other astromech that comes along since, you know, he knocked that Imperial one out of the ghost hangar.
That was when I first liked Chopper. Like, I really liked him. I'm not bloodthirsty, but that was just entertaining.
It's just perfect. They're just sitting there, and all of a sudden you see Chopper just bump him right out. So, you know, he doesn't have that relationship with the astromechs. He is the astromech. So. Yeah. But definitely, this was top-notch episode here. I thoroughly enjoyed this. Grading time. It's time to grade Trials of the Darksaber. Lillian, how would you grade it? How would you grade this episode?
Is this like A, B, C, D? Okay.
Yeah. I've heard of these.
Just like if you're in school. Yeah, I would hope you would, Dan. You are a teacher.
I would say A+.
Perfect.
It just hit everything I wanted it to and more.
Excellent. Dan, how would you grade?
Now let's hear from the teacher, the real teacher.
Hello. it's definitely an A+, and I do not throw A+s around for the show or for anything, because I think that's the cream of the crop. But the pathos exhibited through the creation of this, the performance by the actors, the animation, and just the buildup. I mean, I think this, I'm a big fan of the slow burn. That's why I like anticipation as much or more than the moment often. So this just hit notes that I didn't think that they were going to hit. And I thought it was beautiful. It got me emotional at the end. It's an A+ all the way.
and we're going to make it 3 for 3 because I definitely had to grade this an A+ because you can't get better storytelling than this episode. This was firing on all cylinders. The acting was perfect. The story was perfect. The emotion was at an all-time high. Even without Chopper, it's an A+. It's just, you can't get around it. It's just a perfect episode. This has been a lot of fun. Dan, Lillian, this, I'm so glad y'all were able to join us. Definitely, if there are going to be people out there that want to continue the Star Wars talk with you, maybe off the air, how would they go about doing that if they wanted to talk Star Wars or other things with you? Lillian, how would someone want to, what would be the best way to contact you?
I'm always chatting with people on Twitter. My Twitter is at Lillian Sky with an E _.
Excellent. Excellent. And Dan, how would people want to get in touch with you?
You can find me on Twitter as well at Mr. Zehr, Zehr. And I do a little show called Coffee with Kenobi. Where you can definitely chat. Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. We caffeine or no caffeine, we've got whatever anybody needs. And it's we do that, of course, once a month. And we are going to evolve the show as we get closer and closer to celebration. There's a little bit of a teaser. So good things are happening. You can find us everywhere on social media, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, iHeartRadio, just about anywhere there's a podcast, you'll find us. And then I also write for StarWars.com on comic books and sometimes on education and mythology as well.
Perfect, perfect. Definitely some great things to check out from these two. Lillian and Dan are awesome people, so definitely hit them up, talk to them, ask them your questions. I guarantee they'll have some great answers for you. Of course, if you want to talk to me, of course, the best way is on Twitter at TAHarris121079. You can always email me through Coffee with Kenobi, aharris@coffeewithkenobi.com. We want to know your thoughts. Tell us what you think about Trials of the Dark Saber. We got some great feedback already through Twitter. As people were tweeting their thoughts out about how what a great episode it was. At Joe Abode basically said it was an emotional look at Sabine's past while advancing an interesting plot line. Said it was great music too. I have to agree with them there. At Trilobite Larva even asked, brought up your Arthurian parallels, Dan, that you mentioned earlier in the show. And even asked the question, do you think she'll become the next ruler of Mandalore?
I don't know. I'm not a big speculator guy, but I think clearly they're building something that is going to be interesting.
It definitely is. I don't know if we'll go that far as a leader, but you know what? Sabine, Satine, it is similar.
I almost said Satine a number of times when we were talking about it, actually.
I slip up and say it all the time, so you're in good company.
Well, thank you. I thank you, both of you, for spending time chatting with me about this. It's a great episode, and I've had the good fortune of hanging out with both of you in person on a few occasions, so it's great to reunite and chat about one of our favorite things, the Star Wars universe.
Exactly, and I'm glad you both were able to join us. And they're joining me tonight. Definitely a lot of fun, a lot of great episodes. It was definitely a great episode. And definitely if the series goes on, definitely I want to get you both back and do future discussions as well. Because we still got a lot of stories to go. So thank you so much for joining me. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. Check out coffeewithkenobi.com. We got some great stuff there. A lot of great blogs that go up daily. Other great podcasts. Well, Dan mentioned the flagship show, Coffee with Kenobi, of Rebels Reactions. You find all our past shows there. Other shows as well. We have the Comics with Kenobi. If you like your comics, if you like the old Legends books that formerly known as the Expanded Universe, check out Legends Library. And of course, we do have Lattes with Leia for the fangirl perspective. Tell you, we got a lot going on there, so definitely check it out. Dan, Lillian, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. This is the podcast you're looking for.
Well, kid, you pulled it off. Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
Chopper, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed at coffeewithkenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Torak.
This is Spectre One. I need a lift.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars-related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along.
If you love Star Wars and love the excitement of chasing your favorite Star Wars collectibles, the Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app from Topps is for you. Download the free app from iTunes or Google Play and collect your favorite images from the classic 1977 Star Wars cards to Clone Wars, Star Wars Rebels, The Force Awakens, and much more. Collect and trade with friends new and old through the Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app from Topps. These are the cards you're looking for.